Bicycling in Maine, where to go and how to have fun safely. When it's hot like this outside, a great way to create your own breeze is to ride a bike. If you agree, if you've picked up cycling recently, you are not alone. Bicycling is really increasing in popularity. According to Statistica.com, the number of people in the U.S. who have been cycling in the past 12 months is 66.2 million. That's up more than 15 million people from just 5 years before. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will learn about the cycling opportunities in Maine for everyone, from beginners to those of you who'd like to start racing. We'll also discuss biking safety. Last year was an especially bad year for automobile bicycle collisions. Maine Calling goes for a spin next. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Cycling in Maine means different things to different people. Some take to the trails on mountain bikes. Others get on road bikes to ride a half or a whole century. And gaining in popularity are people riding electric bicycles. Well, today we're going to learn about all kinds of ways to enjoy cycling in our region, as well as how bikers can coexist safely with cars and pedestrians. In the studio with me, John Williams, who is Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. Bruce Wallingford is the owner of Ernie's Cycle Shop in Westbrook. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Kiri Piccinini. She's active in advocacy for bicycle and pedestrian access, and she is on the board of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you looking for a good place to ride with your family, or would you prefer to share a place, a secret place that's just wonderful with the rest of us? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start by asking you all how you got into cycling. John Williams, I understand you like to do these really long treks, both here in Maine and in kind of exotic places.
I do. I got into cycling. I've ridden a bike my whole life, but about 10 years ago, my wife and I were going to Ireland, and I didn't really want to go, to be honest. I was meeting my parents there, and we were going to be on a bus touring around the country. And I thought, well, what else could we do? So we decided we'd go on a bike tour. And it was our own self-guided tour. Our training consisted of going to Acadia National Park one afternoon, riding the carriage trails. We flew over. We'd rented a bike, which turned out to be maybe 40 or 50 pounds. And with no training and in the pouring rain, we took off on our three-day bike tour. We only made it to the second day when I decided I couldn't go any further. We were in a pub, and I found a sign that said, call this number for a taxi. And, in terms of a bike tour, it wasn't the greatest, but it really got me inspired. It was so beautiful, and I just thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I've got to get in shape, and so I've got to start riding. And we started doing that. Originally, we had mountain bikes, and we were riding on our mountain bikes. Later on, we got touring bikes, and then we started doing tours and events. We've ridden across Iowa three different times on a big ride they have there. Ridden in Oregon on a similarly big ride. We've ridden by ourselves, basically from Maine to Detroit now, but in pieces because I never have much time and she never has much time. So we love it. We love cycling. We love the feeling, but mostly I love, getting out and seeing different places on a bicycle. It's just the best way to explore. So you see so much more and feel so much more than you do in a car. And so it became something I really like to do. And fortunately, about 6 or 7 months ago, I was able to get this job that I have now with the Bicycle Coalition of Maine and just be involved in bicycling and pedestrian issues generally.
How long did it take, John, to get you fit enough to go on one of these long treks? You said you came back from Ireland and thought, I've got to get into shape. How long until you were really able to do something like this fearlessly?
Well, I'd like to say some amount of time and then I can keep doing it, but I go through this every year. This time of year, I'm just feeling like I can ride longer distances again. But after the Maine winter, I don't train well in the winter. I have a bike on a trainer. I almost never use it. And so every spring, I go through the same thing, thinking, man, I'm just getting too old. I can't do this anymore. But a few weeks later and several rides later, I feel fine, and actually don't have any long rides planned for myself this year, but who knows? There's still several months
left. I'm sure you've got a bucket list. So, Carrie, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're a real advocate for safety, bicycle safety. And what is the story? How did you get interested in this? You came to Bangor, Maine for this reason, didn't you?
Well, indirectly I did. So I spent 10 years in San Francisco and New York riding. I mean, I was definitely one of those kids that just loves cycling. But as an adult, I was doing that for commuting to work in both cities. And then I picked up velodrome racing and bicycle touring, just like John was talking about. And then I moved to Maine. What caused me to move to Maine was a very dear friend of mine suffered a traumatic brain injury in a bicycle crash. So because he's from the Bangor area, I moved here to help him rehabilitate, and I stayed. So it's been 8 years. He uses a wheelchair, but we do ride regularly. He is able to get back on a bike, and we ride two or three times a week on recumbents. But his experience incensed me to start looking a little more closely at infrastructure from a pedestrian and also, you know, a bicycle standpoint, and how people can still utilize those activities.
Okay. And Carrie, this has been a really hard year when it comes to bicycle safety in Maine, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I know the Maine DOT is very closely monitoring in the last couple of years the incidents and crashes happening.
And how many? It wasn't last year a record. I mean, one of those terrible record years for pedestrian and bicycle collisions with automobiles.
I think last year was, John, why don't you chime in? Because I think you might have the number at the top of your head.
I think it was 21 pedestrian deaths and two cyclists that died last year. That cycling number wasn't particularly high, but the pedestrian deaths were very, very high, much higher than usual. We don't have good numbers on how many crashes there are that don't involve deaths. Because of the way DOT records crashes, if there isn't a certain amount of property damage done, they don't necessarily have that information. And so we don't have those numbers. We have a lot of evidence that people are involved in many, at least scary incidents, if not actual crashes. And we think a lot of that's due to distracted driving, really motorists not paying attention, and in some cases cyclists not paying attention, but it's really an issue that a lot of us are concerned about.
Carrie, you said you wanted to focus on infrastructure issues. What is it? I mean, I think probably anybody, even someone who's not a cyclist, could say off the top of their head, well, you know, I know that the edge of many main roads is crumbling, and I know many places don't have bike lanes, but expand our thinking beyond then that. What do we need in Maine? What do we have that's good, and what do we need to have?
Well, there's really a few things that we look at. There's policies, programs, and projects. So, you know, something that might include education, infrastructure, what kind of city policies or procedures are that a municipality is determining and putting in place. I can tell you that just building on what John said, sometimes it's if a crash is not reported to a police department, it won't end up in DOT's books as in that data. Maine DOT has really put a step forward in the last 15 years or so, has made a concerted effort with state municipalities and interest groups to widen shoulders and create shared use paths. And they know that that has generated $66 million in bicycle tourism alone since 2001. But the other aspect is the education. And I know the Bike Coalition is doing a lot with that to educate children, to educate people who are new riders. I also know the New England Mountain Bike Association does beginner rides through its member bike shops. So there are different aspects there that do contribute to safer riding.
John, at the beginning of the program, I talked about a statistic that something like 66 million people have ridden a bike in the last 6 months in America. Is this trend, that's up 15 million people from just the 5 years before, is that trend the same for Maine as it is for the nation at large?
I don't have specific numbers for Maine, but I'll just tell you, I live up in the Damariscotta area, Driving here to Portland today, I saw four bicycle tourists fully loaded, and I'm sure they were doing the adventure cycling, one of the routes. So bicycle tourism is really growing. A lot more people are out doing bike tours. There are a lot more people commuting on bicycles. I see that because I work in Portland, and there are a number of people that commute all year long on their bicycles. But particularly at this time of year, you see a lot of bike traffic. There are some growing segments. We think that mountain bike riding is really a growing area. And I think you mentioned in the lead into this, e-bikes are a growing area. So there's a lot of areas where bicycle riding is growing. I don't know if it is on the roads, just as far as road riding, the kind of traditional, what you think of as a racing or something like that. I don't know that those numbers are going up, but bicycle riding in general is definitely going up in Maine and nationwide.
Okay. I want to go back to something you said briefly earlier, Kiri, about the kind of bike riding you've been doing. You said you commuted on your bicycle, but you also did velodrome racing. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, velodrome. So it's, you see old-time photographs or videos of this sometimes, easy to find online. But there's cyclists racing around a track. So there's these velodrome racetracks all around the world, and there's one in New York City that I raced at. Superficially, I mean, I'm not really into the racing thing so much. I really like solo bike touring the most, but it's a great way to get out there. And then there's your typical road races, and there's also mountain bike races, and there's cyclocross races, which where in cyclocross, you're encountering a lot of different kinds of terrain, whether it's mud or water or pavement.
That sounds fun.
So velodrome racing is just the tip of the iceberg.
Is racing, the other kinds of racing that you mentioned, is this on the rise as well? We see so many more running races out there. Are we seeing more and more bike races?
Bike races are... Oh, go ahead. Well, go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to say there are a lot of rides, and some people take them as races, but you don't have to. And when I go on those, I like to just ride. It'd be bad if I didn't because I'm pretty slow. But there's a new one that just started this year up in Millinocket, the Millinocket Century Ride. They had, I don't know, something like 100 riders on their first year. There are a lot of events like that across the state. We have a couple with the Bicycle Coalition. We have one coming up in July, the Lobster Ride. And we've recently had a women's ride. A lot of cycling clubs are putting on rides. A lot of organizations, the Trek Across Maine, that puts on a ride. So there are a lot of cycling events out there.
Let me ask you about that, though. I know Aroostook County is very excited about something coming up in September. Tell me about that, John.
Oh, I'd be glad to. The Bicycle Coalition, this will be the sixth year. We put on a week-long ride. The ride's about 300 miles long. And we ride from community to community. And if you're a rider, you just ride your bike. That's the wonderful thing, maybe 50, 60 miles a day. And when you get to the next town, there's magically what we call the bike village has been reset up for you. So the riders, for the most part, camp. And when we go into each town welcomes us. They, with great local food, local culture. In Aroostook County this year, the ride's starting in Presque Isle. It's going up through Caribou, Madawaska, Fort Kent, riding out to Allegash, and then I'm missing one town, but it's the Lakeside Inn in St. Agathe. There it is. And then back to Presque Isle. In every town up in Aroostook County that we're going through, and not just the towns we're staying in, the local people are really putting on a show for us and for our riders. I know they're going to be great bands. They're going to be street festivals. It's really just a great way to tour with a lot of people. We have 450 riders. A lot of people who have similar interests, but also just to get to know the area. And we move it around every year. So this year's in Aroostook County. Last year was in the Western Mountains. The year before that, it was way down east. And so it's been all around the state, and we'll continue moving it in years to come. But this year, it's in Aroostook County, and we're excited. And I think the people in Aroostook County, particularly northern Aroostook County, later on, we'll get to southern Aroostook County, but this year it's in northern Aroostook County.
Kiri, I want to ask you about biking for women. Why is there a separate effort to get more women involved in biking? What's out there, and what are the issues involved?
I don't actually have a lot to say about any kind of riding that's based on men or women. I know, like, for instance, the Bike Coalition we're ending the women's ride. I think John could probably talk more about that. I would like to actually go back to something you asked earlier, Jennifer, if that's okay.
Sure.
You mentioned back to the rise of bicycling. Is it in racing or touring, or what kind of recreational riding is increasing? And I can tell you, I do think it is all types of cycling. On a national stage, according to the League of American Bicyclists, bicycling is a growing multi-billion dollar industry. $6 billion has been generated just from bicycle manufacturing, and $49.6 billion is spent by recreational cyclists on meals, transportation, lodging, gifts, entertainment, the kind of riding that John is really talking about, that he does personally and also the Bike Main Ride endorses. And that information is corroborated too by the Outdoor Retailer Association. And then we're thinking about, well, how much bigger does that number expand when we're looking at jobs and federal and state local taxes? So with the popularity of, you know, the rides mentioned before and things like the Dempsey Challenge and states, DOTs getting involved and creating more infrastructure, there is unequivocally a ride in cycling and more popularity.
All right. I want to ask you, John, I read this morning that 12% of Americans don't know how to ride a bike. I'm imagining if you are listening to this program and you don't know how to ride a bike, you might think, boy, am I embarrassed to have someone teach me. Are there programs where people, adults, can learn?
There are. I was going to first start with the program for children. We have a couple of educators on our staff that go into schools and teach children how to ride bikes. And, you know, it's not as easy in many cases as it used to be because the streets are busier. Sometimes parents don't feel comfortable with their kids out on bikes. So we teach bike safety skills. We teach very young kids how to ride bikes on balance bikes that don't have any pedals. We also have some classes for adults, or some of our events, riders can come. They probably need to know how to ride a bike, but they may have never been on a bicycle tour or done any long distance riding. And we try to help them. We'll have ride ambassadors who will ride with them and show them the ropes and answer any questions and just help out. I mean, there are little things that happen. Your chain falls off. And for people who ride a lot, that happens all the time. So you get pretty used to putting your chain back on. But if you haven't ridden, it can seem like, oh, now what? Now what do I do? So it's more than just learning how to balance and ride a bike. And I should say it's more than just our staff, too. There are many. We work with a lot of bicycle instructors. Some of them we contract with, and some of them just work with us and volunteer to help people learn how to ride.
All right. And so they can contact someone at the Bicycle Coalition of Maine if they want to learn how to ride. We do have to take a quick break. We're talking about bicycling in Maine. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Two Fat Cats, scratch baking with an emphasis on Maine desserts and pies in Portland and South Portland, and at twofatcatsbakery.com. And InSource Renewables, committed to reducing solar costs in partnership with Greater Bangor Solarize, greaterbangorsolarize.org. And Mercy Hospital, celebrating 100 years in Greater Portland, partnering with the community to deliver the next century of care, mercyhospital.org.
On the next Fresh Air, President Trump and Russia. We talk with Michael McFaul, who served as the U.S. ambassador to Russia under President Obama. We'll discuss the planned Trump-Putin summit and what McFaul's experience was like in the room with Putin. Putin blamed McFaul and Hillary Clinton for the protests surrounding Putin's third election as president. Join us.
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. What is your special hidden corner of Maine? Are you willing to share? Send us a picture of your hidden corner and a few words describing what it means to you. We'll put your photo in a virtual picture frame and share it with Maine Public's audience. All entries will be entered to win a day on the coast with Maine Coast Heritage Trust, a statewide land conservation organization. Celebrate the importance of Maine's natural wonders with us. Go to mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Biking in Maine. Joining me soon, Bruce Wallingford, owner of Ernie's Cycle Shop, will be with us in just a few minutes. John Williams is here in the studio with me. He's the executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Kiri Piccinini. She is an advocate for bicyclist and pedestrian access and a board member of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. You can call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Tim Fahey. He's the author of a book called The Fun Mover Chronicles about his bike ride across the country. He lives in Scarborough. Tim, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this ride you took and why you took it.
I took it for a number of reasons. It was a 4,200-mile ride across the United States from Anacortes, Washington to Scarborough, Maine. And for cross-country cyclists, it doesn't count unless you put your back tire in the Pacific and not stop until you hit the front tire wet with the Atlantic. I did it about 4 years ago, and I took it, it was one of these check-the-box items. I was 53 in sorry shape, and had a family loss, and had to pedal off some grief and see some adventure.
And were you a cyclist before you took on this 4,200-mile journey?
No, I took one spin class to practice for my bicycle ride across America, and spinning beat the heck out of me. I figured bicycling is more fun, so I just let that one go.
I know you have a whole book of stories and challenges, but pick one. Tell us something fun or scary or wild that happened to you on your ride.
The word in your sentence, scary, popped out. I saw a bear. I saw a bear with no bars between me. That was pretty scary. I'm on a downhill, beautiful run, and a bear comes out of the woods and steps right in front of the bike ahead of me. Well, I say right in front for exaggeration purposes, but it's about 80 yards away. And those things are big. And I found myself at the very bottom of the food chain, not a good place to be.
And what state was that in?
That was in, that was in Montana.
Oh, my.
It was in Montana in the East Glacier National Park. And it was, that was a scary part. But generally, I had fair weather and the friendliest people in the world you come across. Anyone on a bicycle is a non-threatening person because there's no escape car and people are very, very friendly. So I had a great time. It was 72 days of not knowing where I'd sleep every night. And if the callers, or I should say the listeners, want some adventure, that's one great way to do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tim. Before I let you go, I need to ask you for some advice or some recommendations. We'll ask this of a lot of our callers. Where do you like to ride in Maine?
I like to ride just around the Scarborough area in South Portland. I like to ride early in the morning and on weekends especially. My fear is the texters and the cars. There's a lot going on inside of cars and outside, and the bicycles have no defense. So early mornings around your neighborhood.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for calling in. Tim Fahey lives in Scarborough. He has written a book called The Fun Mover Chronicles about his bike ride across the country. And I want to say that now Bruce Brawlingford, owner of Ernie's Cycle Shop in Westbrook, has joined us here in the studio. And Bruce, before we go to some more calls, I just want to ask you, what are you seeing in your shop? What kind of bikes are popular these days?
Well, the mid-fats are really popular. It's like halfway between a regular mountain bike and a fat bike. But we have all ranges of bikes, all ranges of people. People are just into having fun, and they're trying to get back into biking as something they do for fun.
Okay. Are you seeing an increase in sales in the last few years?
We have. We've a lot more repairs, and then, again, a lot more sales, too.
All right. Well, we'll go to Paul in Cumberland. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello, Jennifer. I've been the president of the Portland Velo Club in the past, not currently, but been racing my whole life. I've done over 1,000 races throughout New England and the United States and actually internationally. And recently I've been doing bike touring also. Have a big trip planned this summer to Iceland for about a month to tour around the island camping. And I've been really enjoying doing some extensive bike tours. over the last 35 years of racing, a very big increase in the sport, in all aspects of the sport, from mountain biking to cyclocross to road riding, and especially in the junior category. So a lot more women are starting to get into cycling and a lot more juniors, and that's sort of a fun and exciting time.
Paul, I can't let you go without asking for a recommendation. Where do you like to ride? In Maine. Shoot, looks like we've lost him.
No, I'm here. We have some great rides locally. There's weekly rides that go in the southern Maine area that I love. We have a long, hard, mountainous loop called the Raymond Loop, and you can Google those and find the maps of them. But there's all kinds of things along the coast, right off of Cumberland. There's some islands that you can ride a bike on, and just some wonderful rides along the shore if it's hot, or inland if you want mountains.
All right. Well, Paul, thanks for calling in. And I want to turn to you, John, because I know that if somebody wants to find a ride near their house, there's a way they can do it on your website, right?
There is. We have a great new feature on our website. It's called the Where to Ride website, but it's actually part of the Bicycle Coalition's website, bikemaine.org. And if you go on there and click on to Where to Ride, you'll find a map of the state of Maine, and you can search on your particular area. If you live in Penobscot County, you can search in the Bangor area. You can search on the distance of the ride, the type of ride, mountain bike, road bike. So it's a really good site. There are other sites like it that just kind of list any ride anyone puts on, but these are all sites, or all rides, before we put them on. We've tested them out to make sure it is, in fact, a good ride. And over time, we hope to also add information on where local restaurants would be, places that might offer bicycle repair services, other things like that. So we have plans to grow it and also to put on more rides. But there are already, I think it's about 200 rides now that you can go on, and they are statewide. I think it's just a real positive resource to find a good place to ride in your area, one that fits your what you want to do.
Elaine on Facebook writes, there's a near epidemic of distracted driving. Has me concerned about venturing out on the road, so I tend to stick to Acadia trails. The New York Times recently ran an article about drivers who target cyclists in LA, viewing them as a nuisance. We need far more bike trails, bike lanes in Maine if we want to capitalize on our reputation as an outdoor activity state. Perhaps the Bicycle Coalition could launch a robust public awareness campaign about driver safety. So, Kiri, there's a lot there. Have you heard about any incidents like Elaine's talking about people targeting cyclists?
I haven't heard that in Maine. I think there's really three levels to the kind of the bone-on-bone interactions we see between cyclists and drivers. First, sometimes drivers just aren't aware of cyclists. They're not looking for them. Two, they don't know how to behave. They're not educated on how a cyclist should be and how they should drive around a cyclist. And then the third is plain aggression. I think we suffer a lot less aggression up here in mid to northern part of the state. I can tell you that the Bangor Police Department has stated, their community relations officer, Officer Gastia, has explained to the public here, is that if you see, whether you're driving or you're walking or you're biking, and you're seeing a car or a cyclist be very aggressive or not following the rules of the road, what you want to do is take that car model down, take the color down, and just get the time and the intersection, because and report that to the police, because they can go back and look for, you know, that plate number or the license plate too. If you get the license plate number, they can track that.
All right. We have an email here from Jason. I love cycling, but I have wide and very flat feet. After a few miles of pedaling, my feet kill me. Any suggestions as far as brands of shoes or pedal shoe combinations to try? Have you heard this one, Bruce?
No, but there's a movement to a bigger pedal. It's a larger platform, so it's not stuck in the middle of your foot. And I would try to go with smaller trips at first and then go to the longer trips and not try to do an hour trip right out of the gate. Ease into it a little bit. 3 15-minute trips is as good as a 45-minute trip as far as exercise goes.
We'll go to Steve calling from Freeport. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thanks. Great program. I consider myself a road biker, a long-distance endurance riding biker. And on the whole, I consider myself a courteous rider, but as a self-defense strategy. Essentially, I want drivers who pass me to feel like I know what I'm doing, that I'm in charge to the degree that a bicyclist should be. I don't generally ride in a group because quite often groups seem to be quite rude, and I don't really want to be a part of that. My idea of group riding is when a car approaches from the back, someone says, car back, and then everyone falls into line into single file. It's not quite as much fun, I agree, but it's much safer, and it shows a kind of courteousness that, you know, we're not trying to dominate the road, which, you know, it just makes people so infuriated. And the sort of the self-preservation part of that is a car weighs how many times more than me? The other concern I have that's maybe a little odd, maybe, but it's over-courteousness. When a very polite car is overtaking me on a hill, just envision this. You're on a hill, car's coming up, and they pass to my left, sometimes 15 and 20 feet to my left. The law requires 3 feet, which is awesome. My concern is passing so far to the left, people often forget they're being courteous. They're forgetting they're passing on a hill, which is a dangerous thing, and it's pretty scary sometimes. I cringe and just am ready to bail to give them room if something happens and a car's coming. And on a different note, I'd just love to make a little plug for something called randonneuring, which is long-distance endurance riding. The best-known example of that takes place every 4 years in Paris. It's called Paris-Brest-Paris. It's an awesome experience beyond imagination in a land where people really revere bikes. Two things. One of my favorite rides is around Merrymeeting Bay, starting in Freeport, ending in Freeport, going up to Richmond and around the bay. You get some beautiful views. And I'd love to hear any updates on work with Amtrak, which has been warm and cold. I remember catching I had to go to a wedding. I was running behind. I was down somewhere near, south of Portland. And there was one place I could get my bike on the train to get a ride up to Portland by train. And that's no longer available anymore in Wells, for instance.
Okay, Steve, a lot there. Why don't we start with the end? And do you know about Amtrak and about bicycle access?
Amtrak nationwide is trying to improve access for bicycles. In fact, my wife and I just got on an Amtrak right outside of Burlington, Vermont, and rode back to our car where we'd started our ride from in White River Junction. I wish we had that in Maine. In Maine, on Amtrak, you can load bikes in Boston, in Portland, and in Brunswick. But if you're trying to go to a stop in between, like Wells, you can't. So I'm hoping that Amtrak will improve that situation, because there's a lot of good riding in stops that they don't currently provide that service for.
Okay.
But they are
ahead.
Trying to expand it nationwide and have more roll-on, roll-off bicycle access to. And, you know, when I did it in Vermont, their conductors were very good about making sure when you had your bike, you were ready. So when you came to that stop, you got off in just seconds. So it doesn't really slow down the whole train.
And Carrie, I want to bring up something else Steve was talking about, which is the sort of common courtesy, the line between what's legal and what's courteous. I know a lot of people get frustrated when they come across a Peloton and they're trying to get somewhere. So why don't you talk about that a little bit? How do we find the balance?
Well, first I have to praise Steve because he sounds like a very proactive rider, he and his group. There is a common courtesy, what he talked about, and right now the Bike Coalition of Maine, the Advocacy and Policy Committee is working on developing safe positioning language to say, how do you determine those moments in which a car, you know, how wide is a road? Is there a shoulder? Is there debris in the road? How many riders are in that peloton? How do you determine that? And it really does come down to common courtesy. Situations are always different, but you want to be able to not occupy the whole lane if cars do need to pass. You want to share the road just like we would if we were only in cars. But you also want to, you know, own the road, as he was saying, so you can, you know, be a confident rider. Also, you know, one other thought is that A lot of the groups that exist, and the Bicycle Coalition of Maine is really leading on this, is working with municipalities and the state, Maine DOT. So right now, there is the Heads Up public safety campaign to get out there and educate drivers and all road users, really, and pedestrians and cyclists on how to use the roadway.
Is there somewhere somebody can go if they just want to read up, Kiri? If somebody is either an automobile driver in an area where there are a lot of cyclists, or a cyclist who's really getting into riding again, for just a really nice summary of what the rules of the road are?
I would direct them to two sites. One would be bikemaine.org, put on by the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and also bikelaw.com. That is a national network of lawyers who help clarify law and rules. So, you can also reach out to either of those groups to have a question if a listener has a specific interest or topic.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve, for your call. And we do have to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Rosemont Wellness Center in Portland, where Blooming into Motherhood presents Baby's First Taste, Introducing Babies to Solids, rosemontwellness.com. And New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. One of President Obama's longest-serving advisors, Dan Pfeiffer, now hosts the popular political podcast, Pod Save America. He'll talk about politics in the age of Obama, Twitter, and Trump. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Hello, it's me, President Trump.
And me, Bernie Sanders.
And there's only one thing that we agree on, and that's that everyone should listen to the Capitol Steps July 4th radio show. It is going to be stupendous, believe me.
I haven't heard a radio show this funny since my good friend Thomas Alva Edison told me about wireless transmission. Well, I might even sing a song.
All for free, if you just vote for me.
And I'm going to be singing many patriotic songs, and I know all the words. Nobody knows words like me. I am the best word knower.
Blah, blah, mountains, blah, blah, berries. There's some words here, maybe home. God.
So tune in to the Capitol Steps 4th of July blah, special blah, right blah, here on this public radio station.
The land I own.
Join us tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about cycling in Maine. Joining me, Kiri Piccinini. She is a board member of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine and a safety advocate. John Williams is the executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. And Bruce Wallingford is owner of Ernie's Cycling Shop. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Bruce, how does Portland stack up to other cities in the country as far as places to ride, Portland-Westbrook area?
Portland, Maine is one of the top 10 cities in the country for bicycling infrastructure. We do a very good job. Bicycling Coalition of Maine is a fantastic organization that's done a lot to help support that. We have great riders. Bike trails that go different places are fantastic things to utilize, and in other states they have more of those. But if that trail doesn't go to where you're going, then you still need to get on the roads. And that's where Portland, Maine has really advanced in getting places for the bikes to be on the roads with cars. The laws of the road were taken from the automobile and from the bicycle and adapted to the automobile. So it's, you ride on the right side of the road, slower traffic to the right, and you keep in your lane. So it would be more single-file bicycle traffic towards the side of the road.
And, John, Portland's not the only place where things are happening in the biking world in Maine, right?
That's true. Portland does have some great riding, but really we have great riding statewide. One of the most exciting things, I think, is a new bike route that is in down East Maine. It's called the Bold Coast Bikeway. And we have been working with the people in Machias area, and this route is now signpost, so you can follow the signs and follow the way around. They have a website. You can find merchants who will help do things like refill your water bottle or who might have a air pump for your tires. It's really a great ride. It's modeled, or at least it's based, not necessarily modeled, but based on a bike main ride we had in that area 2 years ago. And our bike main ride brings in a lot of money to these areas. Well, down east, they thought, well, let's see if we can continue this. So they formed this bike route, and it's something that's being done in a few other places, but not a lot of other places. So it's great to have in Maine. There's just great riding all across the state of Maine.
Okay, we'll go to Martin, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Martin. Go ahead.
Hi. Hello, Kiri. Hello, Bruce, John.
Hello.
I'm calling to advocate for 6-foot paved shoulders on all 2-lane roads whenever they're being repaved. There are something like 20 excellent reasons to have a 6-foot paved shoulder on a 2-lane road, only one of which is for the safety and convenience of cyclists. Other reasons are things like snow storage, improved sight lines, place for broken down vehicles, improved traffic flow during high usage, margin of error for errant drivers, pedestrian safety, semi-turning radius at intersections, and many other reasons, not just cyclists. It would benefit everyone if every 2-lane road had 6-foot shoulders.
Okay, Kira, your response to Martin.
Sorry, I was listening to what else Martin was going to say. Hey, Martin, I think that's be a great goal that everyone wants to see. I know from working with cities and working from the state, the thing we first hear is who is going to maintain that and pay for it, and that is, I think, absolutely the biggest obstacle that we have to face. But for those out there who want to see that and want to see improved infrastructure, it means writing in to your counselors and to city staff and DOT to ask for that. And, you know, it's probably worth inquiring, too, to see what's on the books and try to get information out. And if you can form a group and get people to support that plan, that's the way to go. Martin, I would recommend you could calling the Bike Coalition of Maine, and you can see what's on their docket for what they'll be working on in legislation and with the state. I'm not sure if that is something that is a part of the plan. John, do you happen to know?
We'd love to have 6-foot paved shoulders everywhere, but we're not advocating that everywhere in the state just because of the cost reasons. But what we are doing is when we find out about an individual road project, we have a team of people called our community spokes. These are people in the local communities who we count on to do the advocacy, both with DOT, but also with their local road commissioners, to encourage things like putting a shoulder on. We just had one in my area. The road between Damariscotta and Bristol has no shoulder, and it sure does need it. They sure didn't put a 6-foot-wide paved shoulder there, but they did put a little bit of shoulder, thanks in part to local community spokes talking to their local people and saying, this is what we need.
And a shoulder really isn't enough for a cyclist, is it? I mean, if somebody's not sending the street sweeper down and it's full of debris, it's not usable for most cyclists, right?
Well, that is true. If you have nice paved shoulders, on Route 1, for example, much of it has wide paved shoulders. So that's not a particularly pleasant road to ride on because there's a lot of traffic, but it does feel safe. But yes, they do need to maintain it, particularly in the springtime. They need to get the salt, not the salt, but the sand off the road, debris off the road. And in other places, you can be riding along on the shoulder and people will use it for parking. And so that kind of defeats the purpose because then you're forced back out into the street.
Martin, thanks for your call. Moving on now, I've got, where did that go? Here we go. This is an email from DD. He says, I've been trying to find a bike shop store where they sell recumbent bicycles with no luck. Do you know where in Maine there are dealers who sell these? The rider is in a reclining position. Bruce.
We sell recumbents. We order them per order. There's a bunch of different recumbent companies that we deal with. So a lot of the bike shops, even if they don't have a recumbent in stock, will be able to assist you in that purchase.
Who would a recumbent bicycle be ideal for? Who might choose that as opposed to a more traditional bicycle?
People that do long distance trips, and some people just like to be in that position. Other people have physical conditions that gets them into a more comfortable position that they can sustain for periods of time. I find that a recumbent is a little better on a road that has that shoulder, and in city traffic, it's slightly tougher.
Okay. And then tell me about some of the other kind of bicycles that are out there. We talked about fat bikes a little bit, but bikes that might be for people with different kinds of needs.
Well, the best thing to do is to kind of have an idea of what you want to do on the bicycle, and then go talk to somebody that you trust in a bike shop that can show you different bicycles that do that. So there's anything from a road bike, which has got the drop handlebars, the skinnier tires, higher pressures, or a quicker bicycle. And then there's flat bar road bikes. There's hybrids, which is like upright riding position. There's comfort bikes. There's flat footers, which puts your butt closer to the ground so you have good ground contact, but the pedals are a little further ahead of you so you still get good leg extension. There's BMX bikes. There's cruisers. There's dirt jumpers. There's fat bikes. There's mid-fats. There's, you know, just a huge array of bicycles. And every time somebody comes up with a do-all bicycle, I just see another bicycle that I need, you know.
We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Fayette. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks. Great show. I just wanted to make your callers aware of a few things. You know, the Bicycle Coalition does an amazing job of advocating for road and road safety and educating people. But there's another organization in the state that's really setting the bar, the New England Mountain Bike Association. And there are five, I believe, chapters in the state, Greater Portland, Mid-Coast Maine, Central Maine, Six Rivers, which is the Bath Brunswick area, and then Carabasset Valley, make up about somewhere between 500 and 600 active members, and they're all volunteer run. And the organization does mountain bike advocacy and trail building, trail maintenance around the state, and is really setting the bar for what's happening in the state of Maine as it regards to mountain biking, which is really growing. You know, Maine is prime for growth of the sport due to the great landowner protection laws and a certain amount of municipal land. And the number of mountain bike trails that are out there are only getting better and better each year. And then I also wanted to just mention that one of your callers asked about women's groups specific to women. We've noticed in our chapter that we had a lot of women that were looking to get on mountain bikes, but they were feeling like they didn't feel comfortable on the regular Wednesday rides that we had. So we have a group called the Dirt Divas. and they ride Monday nights. They ride Monday nights. It's open to anyone. It's a beginner-focused group ride, and it's there to help women get comfortable on the trails and to learn skills. There's a group in Portland called the Single Track Sisters. They ride, I think, a couple times a week. They have a beginner's ride. They also have intermediate rides and advanced rides, I believe. And then there's a group in Carabasset called the Spinning Sugars. And they also ride Monday nights, and I believe that's also beginner-focused, you know, really with the intent on getting more women into the sport of mountain biking and making them comfortable in a real great learning environment.
Great, Chris. I need to, I'll tell you that we'll put a link on our webpage to the New England Mountain Bike Association. But before I let you go, I need to ask you where your favorite place to ride in Maine is.
I can't give you one. You know, one of my favorite things about Maine is that there's so much good riding, and I try to never ride the same place twice. Farmington, Maine is probably one of Tikka Mountain. The trails there are one of my favorite. Carabasset, Bon Brook. And there's just, Jennifer, we have so much great mountain biking in the state. And so, yeah, I would say just get out there and explore.
All right, great. Chris, thanks so much for calling in. Go ahead, Kiri.
You know, Jennifer, I'd like to add, I'd be remiss not to mention that one of the chapters our caller didn't mention is the Penobscot region for NEMBA. And that is very, very active also with an additional 200 members and to the list he already added. But I have to say in the Bangor area, we're seeing more cyclists, whether commuting or on the road for road riding recreationally or mountain biking. We're seeing more than we ever have. And mountain biking is a faster growing segment in Bangor. If you asked any of the four area bike shops, they would tell you that they're selling more mountain bikes, whether that's a fat bike or a traditional mountain bike. And on top of that, the NEMBA chapter has worked closely with a small environmental nonprofit named Bangor Green Drinks up here. They focus a lot on cycling. And they recently published a trail map, the Bangor Area Trails Map and Guide, that has 150 miles of bicycle trails. You can also use that for snowshoeing and walking. But I do have to say it's pretty exciting. Those are really great trails if someone's looking to come up to the main highlands region of the state.
Great. We have an email from Bruce. Advice to the new cyclist with wide flat feet. Look online for reviews of cycling specific shoe inserts. I think we have time to squeeze in one more call. Wendy, can you be quick?
Yeah, yes, I can. I just want to say that I have found this law to be incredibly dangerous for myself and for everyone that uses the highways. I think it's very poorly thought out.
Which law are you talking about?
The Bicycle Coalition law, that's the bicycle law for Maine. I don't know the exact title of it, but just in terms of basic physics, vehicles are not able to stop if a bicyclist has decided to take control of the lane. We don't know they're there. It's on a blind hill. It's on a blind corner. We come up on them going the speed limit, and they're going 10 miles an hour. That's incredibly dangerous. I've almost been, I've had almost three head-on collisions with people trying to go out around bicyclists. They don't wait until they're safe to pass. They pass.
Okay, so Wendy, since we're almost out of time, I'm going to let John respond to that.
Well, roads are for everyone, and that includes cyclists and walkers and motorists. And the law is that bicyclists need to stay as far to the right as practicable. There are times when you really need to be further over so that the motorist coming up from behind you can see you better. And drivers really need to be patient. There are issues both for cyclists and for other motorists. If you pass a bicycle in a blind spot, if you just wait a very short time, you can usually find a good place to get by and still leave the 3 feet that is required by law.
All right. Well, Wendy, thank you for your call, and that will be our last call. And thank you to our guest. You just heard from John Williams, the executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, Kiri Piccinini, the founder of Walk and Roll, and also on the board of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Bruce Wallingford, the owner of Ernie's Cycle Shop in Westbrook. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had technical help from Rich Tozier. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.